TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Journey, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, you can put your multivitamin jar away because I got you a big old honkin' Leola root here. Best source of vitamins in the quadrant.
Oh, fantastic. I was just wondering when we were going to get to the Leola root, and I'm just so excited that we have finally gotten there. It just makes me so happy, honestly, Chris. And man, you know, you just stew it in a little bit of like a floral broth, and you almost don't even taste the mildew.
Right. I like to grate it on top of my rice.
Oh, you know, like a fine Parmesan. Mm, yeah, yes, yeah, with some mushrooms there. It's fantastic, right?
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize that we hadn't gotten to Leola root yet, because for me, all this timey-wimey stuff that's in Star Trek these days, and always, really, Leola root's just always been with me.
It's always been with me. Is it always been with you, Chris? Or have you eaten and it just stayed with you and it's never left?
That could be it. At least the odor. All right, everyone. We're going to continue our rewatch of Star Trek Voyager. This is the 10th episode of Season 1, State of Flux. It's full of Leola root. And here's a quick rundown. A scouting expedition to an alien planet leads to a game-changing discovery. Surprisingly, it's not the Leola root, nor is it the mushrooms, though these are all pretty tasty finds. Even the Kazon can't lay claim to the title, despite turning out to have Starfleet technology aboard their ship. But we're getting warmer. How did the Kazon get their hands on the tech? It looks like the Voyager crew have a traitor in their midst. As Janeway, Chakotay, and Tuvok set out to solve the case of the cream of mushroom, the trail leads them to a shocking revelation. So, Matthew, with this episode, we are hitting the point in the season where modern Star Trek seasons end. We've hit that 10-episode mark, and then we're flying right past it, and we're getting a little bit of the benefit of that by getting a story that's got a lot of character development in it, and the stuff that's been set up so far in the first season is starting to pay off.
Yeah, I mean, recently, Brandon Braga, you know, even talked about this idea of that, you know, kind of modern shows are really like the Tinder of television. You know, you just get maybe 8 to 10 episodes every 2 to 3 years, and so it's really just this tease. And so it kind of lets you see how when, you know, you go back to this golden age of Star Trek and you have, you know, usually 26 episodes a season. Now, this season only actually has 16, the first season of Voyager. And so the second season will actually be a little bit longer because they moved to some episodes over there. And
of those episodes, we should note, were actually made for season one, and they pushed them into season two, right? Yeah.
And so... But what I find so interesting about this is that we were talking a little bit on the other side of the quadrant before we started recording, and one of the things that we talked to from the very beginning of this show, right, that there was kind of a promise that the show had made with a lot of the threads that it had left dangling. You know, you've got the Maquis and Starfleet, you've got being lost in space, you've got these two crews trying to come together. You've got the fact that being, you know, 70,000 light years from the Federation, a lot of the technologies that we're used to just taking for granted are things to which we can't just use all the time ad nauseum because they take a certain amount of power. They take a certain amount of maintenance, you know, that you would get at like star bases and fuel, you know.
Except the holodeck, of course.
Yes, exactly. like deuterium and all of these type of things, right? And so this is an episode that actually takes almost every single one of those promises from the first episode and that this season has kind of been laying out, and it begins to play with those. I mean, not only that, but I mean, you know, I know it's what everybody was looking forward to is the K's on her back. The K's on her back and you're gonna be in trouble. So I think this is just one of those episodes where Voyager is truly kind of firing on all cylinders because of that very thing of it is paying off the threads and the promises that the show kind of originally made at the beginning. And so much of that has to do with the character focus that we get here with Chakotay and some of the Maquis members, even Carrie and Tuvok and Janeway, all dealing with some really intense storylines, some really intense emotions between one another, and frayed trust that's happening. And so, I mean, again, I guess it'll be no surprise, you know, when I rate this episode highly, but this is really one of those places where they're doing a fantastic job of allowing us to experience all the things that you kind of hoped Voyager might be when you saw the first episode.
Right. Yeah. And with Chakotay here, I think it sometimes feels like Chakotay settles in too quickly as Janeway's number one and kind of readapts the Starfleet mentality more quickly than you would, at least more quickly than you would like as a viewer in terms of creating drama on a TV show. But this episode not only fills us in a little bit on Chakotay's backstory, but it also, I think it shows that there's not as much separation between him and the people who used to be on his crew, on his ship, and the Maquis. The intimacy of the scene with Seska just showing that they clearly have known each other a long time and that there's some history there between the two of them worked quite well. But then it also shows that a lot of what might sometimes feel like him kind of falling in line with Starfleet is more about his sense of duty and his abilities to be a leader for what he feels is best for the overall crew, because, you know, he does quickly snap when he finds out that they've raided the kitchen.
Right.
And he does delve out a punishment, but also to himself as well, just because the soup was brought to him. And I think that I enjoyed at this point being able to actually see a little bit more of Chakotay, have a story that it's not a Chakotay story per se. It's really a Seska story, but it's still very much a Chakotay story compared with what we normally get for him.
No, I think you're absolutely right in that. You know, it really truly is a place where we get to dive into the character of Chakotay in a way that we just haven't before. And I thought that that was really fascinating. And I loved that he was actually getting utilized as a character in this episode.
Yeah, right. Not just to stand next to Janeway on the bridge.
Exactly. And yeah. I think like, and you put it, I think, so well, right, is that, you know, one of the things that we get to do then is we get to play with those loyalties and the struggle that that is. And so I think that's the thing that makes this great for the character, is that it shows us that it is not as easy as one would think it would be. And it shouldn't be, right? And so it's just a great job here by the writers to take a character like Chakotay, give him some depth, and help us to see that the spot that he's in is a difficult spot. And he truly is kind of being asked to have to play both sides. And I like the ambiguity that we put the character in and how we kind of challenge the character in this way. I love it. I think it's great. And they've done, you know, just a really good job in that. And so, you know, well done on them to take the character and make him much more interesting than he has been previously. And it's a welcome change, too, because you do want the first officer to be more interesting. I mean, you know, my wife and I are in season 7 now of The Next Generation. And, you know, one of the things about that show is the way in which the character of Riker is so important to the show and gets so much to do in the show. And so I'm really thankful that we actually, you know, get that here for, you know, our character of Chakotay. So,
and another thing that stands out to me with what they're doing with Chakotay here is how well Robert Beltran plays the role. And when you watch something like that, it does leave you feeling a bit disappointed that they didn't do more with the character in the early parts of the series, because they have such a good actor playing the part, but the character is not very well defined early on. And then we get things like this where we see they actually start really delving into him, giving him something to do and say that's meaningful to who the character is and letting us in on who the character is. And then Beltran plays it very well.
Right,
And also, you know, Martha Hackett is really good in this episode.
Yeah, she
and
really is.
So the two of them playing off of each other is very effective in building Chakotay's character.
Yes. I mean, the idea of allowing Chakotay to have somebody that he was close to in the Maquis is a fantastic idea. Again, you know, what it does is it allows us to see that there is a lot of depth. There's backstory to this character that we're just getting the opportunity to be able to witness. And that this character had a life before they got to the Delta Quadrant, right? And I think that's what makes it great.
And then Seska is interesting, too, because she also obviously had a life before getting to the Delta Quadrant, ending up on Chakotay's ship. And it seems like a very intriguing life, too, given that she turns out to be a Cardassian who has been surgically altered to appear to be a Bajoran. And it's not the first time, you know, we've seen that in a number of cases on DS9, because there's so many Cardassians on DS9, but we've seen that in Tribunal, where you've got this character, Raymond Boone, who was altered. Of course, one of the most memorable ones being Kira in Second Skin, where she's altered to appear Cardassian. And then going the other way, you've got going back the other way, as we have here with Seska, you've got Gul Dukat actually transforming himself into Bajoran so he can get close to Wynn. And there are many other examples in Star Trek of people being surgically altered to appear to be a different race. So this has been done many times, but here it's just really the fact that she's a Cardassian who's been surgically altered to infiltrate the Maquis just opens up the doors to so many possibilities for the character and so many stories that you could tell.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of this episode is that with introducing Seska as being a traitor, being a Cardassian, and her different point of view, like you said, not only is she a spy, but what it does is it really opens up the storytelling for this entire series in this first season, and kind of creates something to which I think as you watch the episode and you come to the end of it, it seems pretty clear that this is going to be something that continues, right, throughout the entire rest of the first season, at least. Like, this is going to be something that we're going to deal with. And I love that. You know, like, again, you do want the series to be creating interesting storylines for the characters to go through and threads to pull on. And even though Deep Space Nine is still running, and Deep Space Nine has begun, of course, to be, you know, much more serialized at this point. Mm-hmm. And they want this to have less of that. But I think the smart thing is that they realize how important it is to not give up that completely. And that's an important part, I think, of the show. And so I'm glad that we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think they're, you know, again, they're doing a great job at building something that after I finish this episode, I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next with all of these characters, right? What's going to happen next with this storyline? This is great stuff. This is what I, you know, want to be able to see in this show. And so I'm very glad that we're doing it.
You're thinking, I really hope the Kazon keep finding ways to keep up with Voyager.
You know, like what's interesting, and I will say this, you know, I think the interesting part of this is that they actually find a way to make the Kazon more interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Because of this aspect. Like this is a smart idea for them to do this because, you know, the Kazon now, you know, don't just quite feel like low rent Klingons. They actually feel like a threat and something that is kind of worth paying attention to now as a group of characters. Mm-hmm. And now they're a little bit more terrifying because, you know, they not only have somebody who is a part of their ranks that is an enemy traditionally of the Federation, but now they have somebody who's kind of desperate because she doesn't have any other choices, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the thing that makes this somewhat interesting as a whole storyline and makes you think to yourself, okay, I am willing to continue with this season, and I'm looking forward to continue with this season because there's a lot going on here behind the scenes, and I want to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and Seska must have been a pretty good spy because she hid with Chakotay all that time, including certainly the suggestion that they had a pretty racy relationship. So you think maybe,
yeah.
How extensive is the surgical alteration that Chakotay never figured this out? And she also pulled the wool over Janeway's eyes all this time as well, because, you know, she just demonstrates in the story because Martha Hackett can play it so well, how she just flips the switch on Janeway, that she has the skill. Martha Hackett does as an actress, but the character, Seska, has this skill to be like a chameleon and can just flip a switch, right, depending on the circumstances. Yeah. So the reveal of who the traitor is in the story is also interesting in terms of the writing, because at the very beginning, it looks like, oh, well, it must be Seska. And then even though they try to lead you astray along the way, especially with Carrie, it ends up being Seska. So it's the very first person, you know, which is typically not the case. But one reason it works really well is something that Jerry Taylor has said about this episode, which is that they spent time letting us get to know Seska, and she didn't specifically mention Carrie in the comments I've seen, but it holds true for Carrie as well. We got to know Carrie. So we have two characters who are suspects, and they're both characters that we've been watching up to this point. So we know who they are, as opposed to it being some crew member, some Maquis crew member who we're seeing for the first time in this story, or who maybe we got a glimpse of once or was mentioned once. Where here, you're not really sure, you know, because Carrie already has shown in the previous episode that he would be willing to share technology if it might help them.
Right.
You know, he'd be willing to go against the Starfleet ideals if it would help them. And so it is somewhat believable. It's hard to put yourself back into a first viewing of the episode after so many years, and you've seen it so many times, and you know how it plays out. But I think that on a first viewing, it is somewhat believable that it could be Carrie and instead of Seska, in part because you feel like they probably wouldn't show you the traitor at the very beginning and follow that as a straight line all the way through to the end. But also because of Chakotay's defense of Seska throughout and the way that Seska tries to mislead them.
Well, I think that the interesting thing about rewatching it, but just in general, I mean, the character of Seska and the way that she's played by Martha Hackett is such a classic female type character, right, who is very used to being able to ameliorate the way people feel about her in ways in which, you know, she's able to smooth them over. She's able to win them over by charming them, basically. And I find that actually to be, you know, pretty interesting. And I think it actually just makes for, you know, a great story that we get that opportunity to watch her play this character in that way. I find it to be, you know, pretty fascinating. So
what do you think about her point to Janeway that if this were a Cardassian ship, they'd already be home? So the basic point is if we're going to stick to the Prime Directive and all of our Starfleet ideals, and we're not going to share, we're not going to make friends, not going to make alliances, it's going to be really hard for us. Now, I'm not so sure that the Cardassians are going to be getting chummy with everybody and making friends with everybody, but they'd probably be a lot more willing to do what they need to do to get home.
You know, I actually thought about this idea more in the sense of that they would be home because they wouldn't have cared about the array.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that was kind of the thing that kind of made sense with, you know, what we know of Cardassians and what they would do and why they would do it. So that's where I kind of went with that as she, you know, as she talked about it. This made sense to me as to why she would say that about the Federation and Cardassians. And, and so, yeah, I found that to be really interesting.
Yeah. And of course, it's a justification for her of why she did this in the first place. But I think it also reflects that maybe her time with the Maquis, you know, she we didn't know this until now, but her assignment was to infiltrate the Maquis. And we know a bit more about the issues that the Cardassians have with the Maquis. If you go back to DS9 and watch the episodes called The Maquis, imagine that. But maybe, and we don't know how much time she spent with Chakotay and with the Maquis, but being there with them, she may have come to understand their beef with the Federation or their beef with Starfleet a little bit more, which could have influenced how she viewed the decisions being made on Voyager, particularly by Janeway and Tuvok and so forth. So it gives you a lot to think about, you know, that's not on the screen, but I think it makes the story kind of rich. And it also, one point I took away from it was even just beyond her, beyond the Cardassians or anything, it's just questioning, as has been done already in season one, it's questioning whether these Starfleet ideals are something that you should always adhere to. Is it some, should you bend the rules when you need to? And in particular, if you find yourself isolated as Voyager does here, what's the value in sticking to your system and your structure and not being willing to go outside it versus what's the value of wiggling a little bit when you need to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can ultimately achieve your goal, which is to get home. And if there's a way you can do it without harming others, especially, maybe you should. Now, and I think that's also the thing here. You know, Janeway's so concerned about the idea of Federation technology being passed along to someone who doesn't have this technology yet. But when they find out that it's actually just a food replicator, you know, that brings into question the idea of sharing technology would be harmful because, you know, ultimately they want food, right? And I think it would be hard on a base level to argue that it's bad to give someone food.
Right.
Now, the bigger idea of shifting the balance of power, you know, if you've got a race that's like the Kazon, who like they don't have water or they don't have food or something, they're weaker than they would otherwise be. So if they're well fed, maybe they become more powerful, and then that shifts the balance of power. You know, that's a legitimate argument, but that's also like a very, very big picture argument.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there is an interesting thing because this episode does begin to butt us up against the questions about, you know, the morality of Starfleet and the situation that you're in, and what do you do in response to being in the whole other side of the galaxy with no support. And, you know, it's very clear that so far the question for Janeway is that there isn't a question, right? Like, we're going to obey the laws and the ways in which the Federation handles itself, and we're not really going to question whether or not there isn't a question in her mind. But this, I think, as an episode, actually kind of does a great job of allowing us to be able to see that the answer is not as easy as we think it's going to be. And it's going to be a lot harder for what they are doing. Yeah, I find this to be really, really interesting. I like the way in which we're you know, just talking about this, and I like the way in which this is setting up that in this episode for a Voyager in general. Like, we're asking really good questions, and that's kind of what, you know, classically Star Trek does. You know, it asks these type of questions, and it makes our characters deal with the ramifications, the choices they make based on the morality that they hold to, and will they stick to that even when things get tough, which is, you know, as we've talked about so many times, the thing that we love so much about Deep Space Nine. And this seems to, in many ways, be kind of living up to that type of question, right? Like, and so the most interesting part of that will be, does Voyager continue to ask those type of questions? And does it deal with those ramifications too? You know, I think that's a really, again, that's just a really great question. If this episode is one that plays with the promise of this show in a way that seems to be making good on that, the big question just continues to be, as we go through this first season, will it continue to do that? You know, and that's only a question we'll get as we continue to walk through the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, those sound like final thoughts, I would say. So what's your rating for this one?
I really like this episode. I think it's actually, so far, I would say that it's one of the best episodes of the season. It's done a really good job. So I will give this episode, actually, I'm going to give this episode 5 out of 5, because I think that it does a very good job of giving us the very thing that we kind of want from this show at this point and in this season. And it makes me excited as I watch this episode to continue on for the next episodes. Like, I am looking forward to digging in to what comes next in this show, which is fantastic. That is exactly what you want to do in a first season of a television show, is to do that.
So 5 out of 5 what?
Oh, 5 out of 5 secret Cardassian DNA strands.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a twisty rating. But yeah, I agree with the things you say. And I think, you know, I like that we've got a whodunit. But within the context of just this basic story, we do a lot of character building, and we do what Star Trek should do and traditionally has always done, which is to ask some bigger questions. In this case, you know, do we share technology, like our actions and the impacts of what those actions would have, and, you know, question right or wrong when you should bend the rules and so forth. So, and also I really appreciate that they did the legwork to make this episode work, right? They, like I was saying, they've let us get to know Seska and Carrie and some of the Maquis conflict as well. That it's all kind of been laid out bit by bit by bit. So we finally get here, and then the story works because they're not springing anything on us. Everything makes sense as to why people are doing what they're doing and how it all fits together.
Yeah, I agree.
So I really appreciate that. So I'm going to give this episode 9 bowls of mushroom soup.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds delicious, actually.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on State of Flux. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you are joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose To the Journey, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not being honest to your own convictions within the defined parameters of your mission, where can people find you?
Well, you could find me all over social media, Chris, under the name Matt Rushing 02. Of course, you can find me here on the network talking about all things outside of Star Trek on the 602 Club. Great show. Hope you'll check that out. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me doing a bunch of shows. Well, a couple of shows. One is called Owlpost with Dre Kaufman, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, as well as over on Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you're trying to figure out how to hide your Cardassian ancestry, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah, that's been hiding that for a long time. So I just hopefully I won't run into any real doctors that could easily scan me and figure out that I'm not actually who I say I am. But you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you, as you mentioned, and also in the back catalog. And you can find me everywhere on social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me, send me a message anywhere. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and all our other shows going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without the support of everyone who's helping us now. So thank you so much to everyone who is a patron. Well, Matthew, go dig through your closet. Get out your Beowulf cosplay gear, because we're going to be delving into some heroes and demons next time.
Well, Chris, I love a good Beowulf reenactment, so set course for home.